right, a beautiful Friday afternoon. Friday afternoons are always beautiful, regardless of the weather. Yeah, this
is even triple happy hour since we're going into a long weekend.
Yeah, this just gets it doesn't get much better than this.
Gets better and better.
See, Friday, 5 p.m., 3-day weekend, and American Hit Radio all at the same time with a brand new series that we're about to start, by the way. I'm excited about this. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. My lovely co-host and wife, Heidi Morales Ryan, here as well. Ariel Mancebo behind the board for us. We're going to be here for the next hour. On Fridays, I'm sure if you're a regular listener, you know by now that we discuss how music changed on Fridays. It's a series of 250 specific topics that we had put together, which we think covers pretty much just about the entire history of recorded music, or the most important and influential aspects of it. Of course, to say the whole thing is such a pretension that it would be absurd. But what we would want to do is say, out of these 250 topics that we're covering, if I lived long enough to complete this, we would pretty much have a fully documented history of recorded music as it unfolded. For example, we dedicated something like 70 shows just to Motown. We've covered Bob Dylan. We've covered the Rolling Stones. We've covered the Beatles.
Bessie Smith.
Yes, of course. And the going way back, we've covered a whole bunch of other artists as well. In fact, I have a list here of them. I'm wondering if I have that with me.
Oh,
yes, look.
Go.
Here's a good example.
Good.
Just to bring us up to date. On the older side of things, which is really where we're going back to now. We've already covered things like, I'm not going to read all of them, but really the birth of an American identity in music, when we covered people like Stephen Foster and Scott Joplin, who is relevant to this new topic in a way. We covered the birth of American popular music, the birth of jazz, birth of the blues was another series. Jelly Roll Morton was a series, as was Sidney Bechet, New Orleans jazz, Bessie Smith, as you mentioned already, Heidi, Big Spiderbeck, Louis Armstrong. We spent almost a year just covering Louis.
Louis is a big one, yep.
We did early big bands. We covered a good number of weeks covering Charlie Patton's Mississippi Delta Blues, which included a bunch of other blues artists from that era, including Son House, etc. The Carter Family, Jimmy Rogers. And this brings us up to, in that order, from the very beginning out of the 250, this would be show number 22 chronologically. And this is going to cover what is known as the Piedmont Blues. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, what? And I totally understand that, because to be completely honest about it, I was unaware that a genre called the Piedmont Blues even existed until I was nearly 40 years old. I really just never even heard of it. And I was a music fan my whole life. The reason for this is kind of simple. Most blues scholars seem to be much more interested in following the blues back to their basic roots.
Right.
And that usually led them to the Mississippi Delta. And if, like me, you had only a cursory understanding of the blues music's deep history, you might have come to believe that the Delta was the primary source for the development of the blues. But the truth really is much more broad than that. The blues is a diaspora. It's been spread all over the world at so many different times, at the same time, in various places. So you can't really just put your finger on one place. Most likely, the blues, you could say that it originated in Northern Africa. We covered this in an earlier show. And from there, it took on any number of forms, depending on where the carriers found themselves. Geographically, the Mississippi Delta was dirt poor and fairly simple, a farming community and rural. So the music that the blues scholars loved reflected that sort of simplicity. It seemed as if this was about as simple as the blues can get. This must be the beginning of the blues. The other reason is it offered a very clean storyline for presenting a birth story. But the truth is way, way, way more complicated. Now, if you want to hear our coverage of some of these earlier topics that I had mentioned, every single one of these is still available on our website. If you go to AmericanHitNetwork.com or search for American Hit Radio, you'll see all of these shows on our site. And if you type in, say, you know, number one or number two, shows number one and number two, you'll get those early shows. And some of the favorite shows I've ever done on this radio program actually are some of the older ones. Birth of the Blues was one of my favorite series that I had ever put together. It was only 3 weeks long, and it felt like it took me half a year to assemble it and compile it. It took a tremendous amount of work, and I was really happy with the result. In 3 short hours, we got so much done about trying to cover The Birth of the Blues. And I presented it pretty much at that time as it did more or less come from Africa to America and then followed it into the Mississippi Delta, like most historians do. This show, though, is to discuss the branch of it that seems to get short shrift. Here's an example. W.C. Handy was writing formal music pieces based on the blues before Charlie Patton or Sunhouse ever recorded a single lick. So obviously it was around before then. New Orleans jazz was built on the bones of the blues. Bessie Smith traveled the country as America's most popular blues vocalist. All of this happened before the Delta artists got around to recording. Meanwhile, African Americans who lived on America's eastern seaboard, they also incorporated the blues into their lifestyle, but in their case, the blues was about integration. It wasn't about being pure or being separate from culture. Mixing it with other popular music styles was normal on the East Coast of the United States. And these areas were also, as I said, more densely populated. The towns and the cities in Virginia and the Carolinas. So the difference in the style between, say, the Delta blues and the Piedmont blues was mostly due to geography. By definition, those who lived in the Appalachian Mountains, which was to the west of what the Piedmont area is, if you're going to define it geographically, the Piedmont is a plateau that after you come up from the eastern seaboard of the Atlantic Ocean onto the Americas, after you get away from the coastline, you hit a plateau. That plateau is the Piedmont. It runs all the way from southern Jersey all the way down the coast, ending just before Florida. Some people would include parts of Florida in the Piedmont because of their, stylistically and otherwise. But the fact is, on the west coast, after this plateau ends, you hit the mountains, usually the Blue Ridge Mountains, the Appalachian Mountains, which ended the Piedmont. Now, the Appalachians were the people who lived there lived apart from the cities. Obviously, it was a rural area. And these people were there usually for a reason. They didn't want to be around other people, So they usually felt suspicion to newcomers and especially city dwellers. So this fact more or less contained, especially the black population, into the Piedmont area to the east of the mountains, where the population was higher, cultures mixed much more easily than they would have in the mountains, and a variety of music styles were heard with regularity because it was a populated area, all different types of people listening to all different types of things. And popular music would get itself heard more readily in the cities than it would in the mountains. From this blend, the blues of the Piedmont took on a style all its own. And today, I think that it can be proven that this branch of the blues is at least as influential and lasting as the blues that came out of the Mississippi Delta. It might not be as pure, per se, because a lot of the ideas came from different factions of popular music. But I still say it's at least as influential. Now, one of the first Piedmont artists, where the name began to take its name from, was an artist named Blind Blake. Now, if you're living in the Piedmont, and first of all, you're disenfranchised, you're an African-American, you're not going to make a lot of money, let's add to that into the mix the fact that you're blind. There's a reason why there are a lot of blind musicians. It's one of the only ways to make a living, especially at this point in time, in the 20s and 30s. If you can't be fully independent and you don't have your eyes, well, you can play guitar. And if you're talented, you can. And if you're lucky, you can sing. You put these things together, now you have the ability to make money. You can make a living. So when you wonder why there's so many blind this, blind that, it's obvious, really, if you think about it. And that's pretty much the case with the person who is one of the first artists out of the Piedmont. His name was Blind Blake. Actually, what's interesting about him is that he was from Florida. He recorded for Paramount, which is the same label that Charlie Patton recorded for, and Charlie Patton was out of the Delta. But all those records were made in Wisconsin. So all these musicians, wherever they lived, whatever style they played in, had to commute anyway, had to get somewhere else to get this stuff heard. So Paramount is amazing in the amount of history that it can offer us in terms of the story of American music, because it was attracting people from all over the South to come. And only later did we even bother to try to discern who was from where, what meant what, what were these different styles. So you got these really raw, gutsy sounds coming out of the Mississippi Delta, but what was coming out of the Piedmont was actually a little bit more sophisticated, because they had stuff that was really, their music would, you could say, was almost, you could hear ragtime in it. You hear it touches a jazz. It wasn't pure. These guys heard what was popular, so they incorporated it into their own styles. Of course, it's blues because you're going to hear the blues changes. But because it's ragtime, it also meant that these guys had to play a little bit fancier. They weren't banging on their guitar and moaning. And I'm not mocking it at all, please. So that's, you know, when you hear Charlie Patton, it's so incredibly intense, it'll frighten you. But in this instance, I'm talking about something that's not really frightening at all. It's much more sophisticated. These guys learned to play in the ragtime style. And then they put that in with the blues thing that they pretty much already had. That was everywhere at this point in time. Putting it together, you ended up with this thing that was called Piedmont Blues. We're going to start with a few tracks by this guy named Blind Blake, who was dead by 1934. So he recorded most of his stuff in the late 20s and early 30s. And so it really represents pretty much the very beginning of recorded music out of this part of the country. The first track I want to play, oddly enough, is called West Coast Blues. I don't even know if he'd ever even been to the West Coast, but the style of the song itself tells you pretty much. Well, you'll hear it. I think if you listen to the guitar picking and the way that you're going to hear different things coming through, this is a great introduction to what the Piedmont's about.
Now we're going the old country route. Great thing you do, swing your party. Promenade. Go to the right. Swing that girl over there with that blue dress on and bring her right on back to me. Stop your funny fooling, for you done got sweet to me. Ha ha, like you made me fool. Bring that girl right on. Anything, boy. Now, people, if you ever heard something to make you feel good, you'll hear stuff in a few minutes, but not now. Now here's something gonna make you feel good. Again. trying to play it. You keep a bet on me. Said I get a big watch of good, so this is the last for this evening. And that's all.
Wow. The thing about Piedmont that I can stress is that it's not like a scary blues at all. It's a blues that'll make you happy. It makes you want to smile. It can make you laugh out loud. That's one key element of it that is so awesome. The other thing about it is, did you hear that guitar playing?
Yeah, it's awesome.
I mean, is that not unbelievable? I mean, how many people can play guitar? I'm a huge fan of guitar players. And playing acoustic guitar well, really well, there's not that many people who can do it in a brilliant manner. I can, even in popular music, I can think of a few that are very good at it and a few, some that are excellent. This guy, Brian Blake, I was playing this the other night and I had to stop and I went back. This next track I'm going to play, I think I played the song and I had to stop and play it like three times again. I'm telling myself, this might be the best guitar track I've ever heard in my life. I mean, think back that, imagine this is like 1930 and this guy's putting this together. It's one man doing all this with six strings. And if you really think about people like what happened as a result of him doing this, Reverend Gary Davis, are you a fan of Hot Tuna? Anybody a fan of, ever hear of that band?
Right.
Listen to what Yurma does. I mean, what do you think? This is where he got it from. Ry Cooder, this is it. All these guys who are considered to be masters of the form are really almost as good as Blind Blake. Here, check this out. This is called Blind Arthur's Breakdown. Just check out the guitar on this track.
Thank you.
See what I mean?
Yeah, he's awesome.
I mean, it's so imaginative that it's almost reckless. You can hear him taking chances. It's almost like parts of it seem as though they're spontaneous. And he keeps time and he keeps going, and it's just so... It's almost like it's spontaneous invention. I'm sure that he knows kind of what it is. And the other thing is, it's got a ragtime construction because
right.
It goes from part A to
yes.
part B. You know,
it's
you
got
hear
that
the
vibe to it. Yeah, you can feel it.
Yeah, and yet it's distinctly the blues, but it's so different from the other type. And it's weird to me that when people talk about the roots of the blues, that this isn't automatically considered to be like just as much of a trunk, really, like a birth point, as say the Mississippi Delta. Because you can trace this really through culture almost as easily, just about as easily as you can trace the Mississippi Delta branch. Yeah, of course, that went up the Mississippi to Chicago. This ended up more or less going to Chicago too, and then pretty much getting, like, because of its recordings, eventually heard by everybody. And it was the guitar players who heard this that emulated it. These were the players where the guitar players went nuts.
It reminds me a little bit of what Joplin was doing.
Scott Joplin.
Yes.
Absolutely. Definitely. The form is very much like how Scott Joplin would write one part and then he'd play a related thing, which was a B section, and then he'd go to a C section, which was related to that. That's sort of like pretty much exactly what Blind Blake just did, and which is his way of folding the blues into what was popular at that time, because this was, you know, ragtime was a popular music still
right.
around this point in time. Now, there he is as just a great player. He didn't sing a lick. He's a great songwriter, though, too. Now, this next song is really funny. It's basically, he goes through a lot, it's about a lot of different things, but the thing that I find the most amusing about it is obviously it's about him, you know, wanting to see a girl who he's probably had a relationship with at some point, but things aren't working out. And he wants to go back and see her again, but she has a police dog, and the police dog doesn't like him.
I bet.
He even says, you know, he leaves his mark on everybody else's pants. It's just truly funny, and he plays so great. I mean, you should listen to this. It works so well on so many levels. Blind Blake with Police Dog Blues.
All my life I've been a traveling man. All my life I've been a traveling man. Staying alone and doing the best I can. I ship my trunk down to Tennessee. I ship my trunk down to Tennessee. Hard to tell about a man like me. I met a gal, I couldn't get her off my mind. I met a gal, I couldn't get her off my mind. She passed me up there, she didn't like my kind. I'm scared to bother around her house at night. Got a poor dog craving for a fight. When he gets a chance.
is rambling when he gets a chance. He leaves his mark on everybody's pants. Guess I'll travel, guess I'll let her be. I guess I'll travel now, guess I'll let her be. Before she sticks her poorly dog on me.
Cute.
Right?
Funny.
But stunning. I mean, that's a 5-star guitar playing. It's so incredibly inventive. The riff that he uses, that he returns to, is just amazing. And every time he does his own accompaniment, he changes the style after every verse. It's not the style, I should say, but he's not redundant. He keeps your ear, you know, tuned to what he's doing because he's so inventive as he moves along. I mean, this definitely has set me out to find more by Blind Blake. This is like kind of like where my education gets kicked in now, because if it wasn't for me doing this series on the radio, I don't know how deep I would have gone with some of these things, you know? And so it forces me to like say, you know, look deeper. And then when you look deep and you find something that really moves you, it's such a pleasure. Even at, you know, this late in the game, I'm still like discovering these awesome things. And it's so great
never
to have a radio show.
To learn.
Yeah, and I can to have a show where I can talk about it and share with people. Obviously, you can hear I'm excited. You know, it's easy to play the pop music of my time, the stuff that I grew up with, and I do a lot of that.
You enjoy
and
that. Too.
I know a lot of it, and I do enjoy it. Of course, I do. But I get excited when I hear something that I didn't know and it's new to me.
Of course.
Because it basically, not only is it like just great music that I'm hearing, but it really excites me because it informs the music that I already was familiar with.
Right.
Like I said,
how
like, you know,
cool is that?
You know, bands like you know, like I said, Hot Tuna or really any, Stephen Stills. I mentioned Ry Cooder, but they're all, you know, these are all people that I've like pretty much grown up with listening to. And then you're like, well, there's like elements of this in what they've been doing. This is probably,
now
you know
what they were listening to.
This is their deep, dark secret, the stuff that they kept from plebeians like us, you know? These guys knew this. They knew Blind Blake. I met Ry Cooder once when I was in Nashville, and I wish I could have brought this up.
Next like, time.
Like, right, Blind Arthur's Breakdown. Whoa. Oh, let's play one more. An odd-titled one called Rumblin' and Ramblin' Boa Constrictor Blues. Again, Blind Blake.
I feel like rambling right out of this whole world round. I feel like rambling out of this whole world round. Reason I feel like rambling, my rider she's jumping down. I'm gonna ramble all night, I'm gonna rumble all day. I'm going to ramble all night, and I'm going to rumble all day. I'm going to track her like a boa constrictor and moan my blues away. Hear that rambling, my baby jumping down. Hear that rambling, my baby jumping down. Lord, I feel like rambling, just like a full-blooded hound. Lord, hear that rambling. That's your daddy rambling and rumbling from town to town. I'll catch you someday, baby. like an angel. She just ain't got no wings. She got wings like an angel. She just ain't got no wings. She keeps me rambling and rumbling just to get to take that thing.
Whew. Another one by Blind Blake. It's called Rumbling and Rambling. Now, you know, I'm not alone in my in sort of freaking out about how great this guy is. What's interesting is like what I had discovered is Gary Davis, Reverend Gary Davis, is considered to be one of the best blues guitarists, and we will be covering him as well in this series as we move through this in a somewhat chronological manner. Certainly anything but strict, because it's very hard to really do that, especially if I get onto an artist and I want to move through time with them for a little bit. But Gary Davis wasn't the type of person that had much to say about other musicians at all. He loved to criticize them. that's for sure. But since he was fairly sparing in any sort of critical assessment, here's his quote regarding Blind Blake. "I ain't never heard anybody on a record yet beat Blind Blake on the guitar. I like Blake because he plays right sporty."
Well, that's to the point.
Couldn't agree more. Now, one of the things that Blake recorded, here's a good example of a song that actually got a little bit of play from a lot of other people. You might know this from other sources, in other words, but I guess, as far as I know, this is the earliest version of this song that I had ever heard. Where Blind Blake heard it, I don't know. Did he make it up? Did he write it? I'm not quite sure. You really can't tell. Because around this point in time, things are being passed around, people are being taught songs, and very little of it, maybe, something like 0.01% of it is being recorded. You know, the other 99.99% of it is just basically from, ear to ear, players teaching each other, sharing information. And this is very close to the beginning. This is really before recordings had reached this part of the country. Yes, there were recording studios, and this obviously where Blind Blake did find his way to one, but it was not easy to do. It was days and days of travel to get to a recording studio.
Right, and if you don't drive because you're blind, it's even harder to get there.
There's a million reasons why you wouldn't record it, and you end up, most of the Piedmont blues stuff, I've read books. I when I was doing the Simon and Garfunkel series, what I was doing during the week, this idea, I'd be going home and I'd be reading book after book about Piedmont blues. And the one thing that I got out of it was that almost all the information that I was learning was stuff that wouldn't help me when I talked about it on the radio, because I'm learning a lot about people that never recorded. It was all hearsay.
Wow.
It was all stories about which person was playing on which street corners in which cities at what time. And people telling stories about, this guy used to be a great guitar player. And, he'd go down and he'd play dances and he'd play on that street corner. And then the cops would come down and bust him up and he'd end up in jail because a lot of times they didn't want you to play on street corners. They didn't like people congregating. So it's rather odd. It was a very difficult way to get the history. But I don't know. Let's play one more Blind Blake track. And then we'll move on to a few other people. But this is, again, one of my absolute favorites. And I think a stunning song in terms of its impact. Blind Blake's version of Diddy Wah Diddy.
There's a great big mystery, and it sure is worrying me. This Diddy Wah Diddy. This Diddy Wah Diddy. I wish somebody would tell me what Diddy Wah Diddy mean. The little girl about 4 feet four. Come on, Papa, and give me some more of your Diddy Wah Diddy. Your Diddy Wah Diddy. I wish somebody would tell me what Diddy Wah Diddy mean. I went out and walked around. Somebody yelled, say, look who's in town. Mr. Diddy Wah Diddy. Mr. Diddy Wah Diddy. I wish somebody would tell me what Diddy Wah Diddy means.
church, put my hat on his feet. Lady said on his seat, Daddy, you sure is sweet. Mr. Diddy Boy Diddy, Mr. Diddy Boy Diddy. I wish somebody would tell me what Diddy Boy Diddy means. Just give me that thing you said on my Diddy Boy Diddy, my Diddy Boy Diddy. I wish somebody would tell me what Diddy Boy Diddy means. Then I got put out of church. The talk about Diddy Boy Diddy too much, Miss Diddy Boy Diddy, Miss Diddy Boy Diddy. I wish somebody would tell me what Diddy Boy Diddy mean.
Man, that's a song that I kind of almost literally grew up with, because Ry Cooder did a version of that on Paradise and Lunch, an album that he had released in 1974, and on Ry Cooder's version, that Earl Hines is the piano player, none other than Earl Hines, the same Earl Hines that played with Louis Armstrong on some of his most classic tracks from the late 20s. So it stunned me to hear this, because I can tell you without a doubt, and if Ry Cooder's listening, I'm sure he would have to nod in agreement.
He'd have to confirm it.
That he learned that everything that he's doing on his version is taken from this recording, because the guitar parts are almost verbatim.
Yeah, really.
It's really stunning. Now, Blind Blake is only peripherally Piedmont, though, technically, because he was born in Florida, although it was said that he had a lot of relatives in Georgia. Around the Sea Island area, apparently, where they actually had spoke a different language, Geechee, I think is it. And we'll be talking about some of that as well, because that's part of the Piedmont that's going to come up. Actually, it might even come up today if we get far enough. But there's one other Florida artist from Tallahassee named Louis Washington. I got one track by him, who played some blues tracks as well, recorded under a couple of different names. He recorded as a Tallahassee Tight. But he also did some gospel songs. And when he did that, he sometimes used his own name. And I got this one off of a collection called Goodbye Babylon, this really cool box that that came out about 10 or 15 years ago. This is Louis Washington performing Got Heaven in My View.
I got the heaven in my view, and my journey I pursue. From unto Lord, yes, I'll never turn back, but the heaven in my view. Standing on the tallest mountain, looking to the earth and the sky, saw King Jesus as a host, in the heaven he was passing by. I got the heaven in my view, Lord, my journey I'll pursue. From us the Lord, never turn back, heaven in my view. Mother and father gone and left me in this world alone. I have no hopes for tomorrow, trying to hurt me home. I got the heaven in my view, Lord, Lord, my journey I'll pursue. Lord, I promise the Lord, I won't turn back, but heaven in my view. When I was a little moon up, moon too striped and fell, I promised the Lord, yes, I'll never turn back, for moon 1,000 years. I got the heaven in my view, and my journey I'll pursue. Lord, I promise the Lord, I'll never turn back, a haven in my view. The stars will bear me witness, yes, the light from God up above. When I started on my way, I saw that sea same above. I got the haven in my view. My journey out will. I promise the Lord, yes, I'll never turn back. Got heaven in my view. Saw me on my knees one morning. Got on my knees to pray. Cast my eyes to the Lord up above to have mercy on me today. I got the haven in my view. My journey I'll pursue. I promise the Lord, yes, I'll never turn back. Haven in my view. Vain I was a moaner. I moaned through stripes and fell. I promise the Lord, yes, I'll never turn back. A moon 1,000 years. I got the haven in my view. My journey I'll pursue. My Lord, I promise the Lord, I won't turn back. A haven in my view.
That was Louis Washington singing Got Heaven in My View. Now let's talk about the history of how this even came about to happen in the first place, because this is pretty astounding if you really think about it. Obviously, before there were any such thing as recording, music was happening, obviously, all over the place. But it was just meant, to move from town to town, person to person. It was exactly like what I said about one song out of 1,000, maybe, or one artist out of 1,000 actually being able to get recorded, even when the recording industry came into existence. But up until that time, what people would do who were interested in things like folk music, whether it was in England, all over Europe, or even in America, in Appalachia, people would go to wherever that music was happening, and they would transcribe it. They would literally write it down, what they heard. And quite obviously, that is very wanting in terms of being able to try to convey what music is. How often could you read the lyrics? Like, if you read the lyrics of, say, Stairway to Heaven, it doesn't mean you're going to understand the song at all. And you could write down the chords. It doesn't mean a thing. I mean, there's nothing is going to capture what a song is except for actually hearing the song. So for hundreds of years, this really, the only way to do it, but it was inept. It just wasn't sufficient. This was how the tradition was passed down. So people would writing information and giving the songs numbers. Well, finally, in 1927, there was a man at the Library of Congress. Right. His name was Carl Engel. And he had decided that there was a, quote, pressing need for the formation of a centralized collection of American folk songs. So Engel basically, you know, he put out a call for the Archive of American Folk Song was set up with a man named Robert Winslow Gordon as the first archivist of American music. He was an enthusiastic collector, so Gordon became interested in folklore through a whole bunch of other scholars who were originally writing it down. So what he was doing, by 1925, he was collecting songs on cylinder.
Much like the child ballads.
Yes, thank you. It was the child. That's what I was trying to remember, Heidi. Thank you very much. The child ballads are what they used when they were writing them down and numbering them. Well, what this guy now was doing, Winslow Gordon, through Carl Engel, he went into the Piedmont area in around 1925 in Asheville, North Carolina. And what he was doing is he was recording artists on cylinders.
Cool.
Literally on like the Edison cylinders.
Tubes.
And he had about 300 of them that he had gotten. And eventually he decided to move on to the Georgia area. By that point, he had about 550 of these things. So he became a library representative of the Library of Congress and getting paid to acquire this material. He had traveled something like 5,000 miles and recorded all sorts of box pickers, as he called them. The material which has survived appears to be unaccompanied, however, and the black material recorded included secular songs, sometimes stuff that wasn't the blues. He would just get anything that he could find, you see? Now, the archive was revived in 1933 under a man named John Avery Lomax.
Right. And then his son took over after
exactly,
that.
Exactly, right? Exactly. Yes. Alan. Now, John Lomax became an honorary consultant and curator of this. Recordings became a little bit easier. They could now put it on, instead of putting it on cylinders, you could record it onto a disc, which was about a 200-pound machine that you'd put into the back of a station wagon. It was
crazy.
Not easy. It was very hard. Some information. They recall that at this time, the library acquired and placed at Lomax's disposal a portable recording machine. Portable, right. The archive has emphasized the use of phonograph records in collecting folk songs whenever possible because the greater accuracy of this method over that of oral transcription alone, obviously.
Yes.
We must be eternally grateful that the older method of collection was thus replaced, and John Lomax blazed an unparalleled trail in the search for American folk music.
So cool.
This is not the place for detailed appraisal, but the importance of his role cannot be permitted to be overlooked. If he hadn't done this, none of this would exist.
Wouldn't be preserved.
Now, in December of 1934, I'm reading this, by the way, right now, or paraphrasing it from a book called Red River Blues. In December 1934, having recorded extensively since his post with the Library of Congress, particularly in his home state of Texas, Lomax came to Georgia. He had experienced great success recording in penitentiaries there, where he felt that the older black ballads might have survived with a minimum of modification. He was looking for, again, roots, the rootsier the better. Thus, in Georgia, he followed that pattern, which had been successful elsewhere, and he arrived at the Bellwood Prison in Atlanta, where he recorded a guitarist named Jesse Wadley. One of Lomax's more inspired ideas to request that the inmates to sing a song outlining the reason for their presence in the penitentiary.
Interesting.
Produced some truly remarkable and personal blues. Wadley gives some detail of the process of his sentence and even names the officials, as well as his girlfriend. Here is that recording by Jesse Wadley called Longest Train I Ever Saw.
It was round your brown coal mine. The train, Lord, come by. Oh, but about half past nine. The train, Lord, come by. Oh, but about half past nine. The train, Lord, come by. Oh, but about half past nine. And never come by the train. The prettiest, Lord, little girl. Oh, but I got a train. The prettiest, one round your brown coal mine. I was blue. Oh, buddy on the cheek was brown. Her eyes, Lord, was blue. Oh, buddy
and her cheeks, body and her cheeks was brown.
Uh-oh.
And her hair was down, and her arms went down.
Uh-oh.
The train, Lord, Lord, had a rain.
Uh-oh.
Oh, buddy, that's for
my view.
The train, Lord, Lord, had a wreck.
Uh-oh.
Buddy had a foe, buddy had a foe, my dear. The train, Lord, Lord, had a wreck.
Uh-oh.
Buddy had a foe, buddy had a foe, my dear.
Uh-oh.
And kill, kill Evelyn, kill Evelyn, I did.
Uh-oh.
Her head, Lord, Lord, was found.
Uh-oh.
Oh, buddy in a driving, buddy in a driving wheel.
Uh-oh.
Her head, Lord, Lord, was found.
Uh-oh.
Buddy in a drive, buddy in a driving wheel.
Uh-oh.
Her head, Lord, Lord, was found.
Uh-oh.
Buddy in a drive, buddy in a driving wheel.
Uh-oh.
Her body, body ain't never, body ain't never been seen.
Others are properly accredited were sung by a quartet,
Bellmouth,
Bellwood prison camp at Atlanta, Georgia, by a quartet composed of Jesse Wadley, leader, John Wadley, Will Jones, and Felix Davenport, through the courtesy of Captain Tyree, captain of this camp, for the Library of Congress in Washington.
How is that for history?
Very cool.
Isn't that amazing? It gives me rushes. I get chills almost when I'm thinking, like, oh, my God, that moment in history, almost 100 years ago. And there's this man, John Lomax, with this crazy machine in a prison finding out.
Well, he knew it was going
to
be valuable.
Oh, it's amazing to me. We're going to have time for one more, but what I'll do is I'll end it with one more recording that John Lomax had made at a different prison. This time, I believe, in Virginia. The artist this time is somebody by the name of Robert Higgins, and this song, quite properly titled, is Prison Blues. Hey, I really hope you're enjoying this series. I'm sorry to have this hour end so fast. I'm just getting started. I've got so much more I wanted to cover. I had 15 songs to go just today, and we did eight of them.
You had a long intro.
But I'm going to have fun with this series, though. We're going to do this for the next few weeks, and I think we'll cover a lot of ground. I hope you're enjoying it too. Have a great weekend. It's beautiful out. And if you got some time, check out American Hip Music or AmericanHipNetwork.com. All these shows are there for your enjoyment. You can get some of this history from some of those shows which have been posted. We've been doing this for 5 years now, haven't we? Something like that. So there's a lot of shows there for you to dig through at AmericanHipNetwork.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, folks. And Heidi and I will see you next week. Here, then, in the meantime, is Robert Higgins doing a song called Prison Blues.
If I had to listen to what my mother say, I would have been home sleeping in my Curloin Bay. But I've been hard-headed and I would not mind. Yes, it cost me heavy it all this time. But if I overcome this trouble I'm in, Lord, I never no more will live in sin. When you was a free man, I had plenty friends. Now I'm in trouble and they won't come in. Lord, it's for Thee, for I'll stretch my hand to Thee. Now, no other help I die say from me. I'll wait, love and do shall I go. Lord, if I could have my dear old mother when she prayed for me once again. Trouble have caused me to weep and it caused me to moan. And it caused me to leave my happy home.
WHPC 90.3 FM.